How will TikTok change politics? This week on The Science of Politics. For the Niskanen Center, I'm Matt Grossman. Congress is fearful of TikTok's influence, but America's young people increasingly see it as a key platform for everything, including learning about and spreading political ideas. How should we view TikTok as a political platform? Will it get young people engaged in the 2024 election, or serve as another distraction? This week, I talked to Netta Klugler-Verlinchik of Hebrew University of Jerusalem about her new book manuscript with Yohana Literat, Not Your Parents' Politics. She finds that young people embody an expressive citizenship, where you should speak out if you see injustice, and have found TikTok to be a fruitful platform for that expression. But she doubts that older politicians have figured out how to use it for effective persuasion. I also talked to Richard Fox of Loyola Marymount about his Journal of Social Media and Society article with Kiani Karimi, Scrolling, Simping, and Mobilizing. He finds that TikTok users are liberal and more active offline and online, but they take politics less seriously. He sees the same complaints about media change that scholars and old politicos have been making for generations, that we're favoring shorter, less substantive, and emotional clips over real learning. They both say research on TikTok is just getting off the ground, and that we should be skeptical of any one platform remaking politics, but also that we should listen to young people who are excited by the new ways of experiencing the world. Let's start with Klugler-Verlinchik. So you've been studying TikTok since its predecessor. What do you think the most important things we have learned about its role in political life, especially for young people?
So Yohana Literat and I have been looking at TikTok back when it was Musical.ly. It was a much more niche platform. And the topic of political expression or political contents on Musical.ly weren't at all a topic of conversation. So it's not something people were aware of. And we were actually really surprised to see these very creative videos created by young people that were engaging in politics in a very playful way. So creating skits around politics, doing music, songs around around candidates, things like that. So that's what first intrigued us to look into political content on TikTok, back when it was Musical.ly and now on TikTok. And really, that was for us the first step into thinking more generally about the role of political expression on social media for young people. And what we see when we look at young people's engagement with political contents on social media is that they engage with politics in a way that often seems very surprising to adult audiences. They're speaking a different language, often the language of the platform. So especially on TikTok, the engagement with politics is very playful. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It's very colorful. It's infused with a lot of popular culture. It's humoristic. It's cynical. It's very affective and emotional. So it goes against a lot of the ways that we as adults often think what political expression should look like. And so what we try to do is first look at what young people are, what they're trying to convey in their own way around politics on social media. And then later also ask ourselves normative questions about, okay, is that form of political expression on social media, is it also conducive to democracy? So I'd say the thing to understand is that although we have a lot of anxiety about young people and social media, and also about social media and politics, specifically this triangle of young people, social media, and politics actually has also a positive potential as a place for young people to socialize into politics, to find their political voice, and to find their connection to the realm of politics that can seem quite distant to them.
So you have a new book manuscript that looks at young people's political expression, especially online and in social media. So what are the major findings and takeaways from that project, and sort of where does TikTok fit in the broader array of tools that young people have?
So one of our key arguments in the book is to offer a new way to think about the relationship between young people, politics, and social media. And that is also thinking about the role of social media for young people's political socialization. So basically, if we want young people to be active participants in democracy, to be people who find their political voice, who think about their connection to politics. And when I say politics, I mean politics widely defined, not only partisan politics, but different civic and social issues. That's something that requires a learning curve. It requires active engagement. And social media can be a place for young people to do that. So while we are often quite anxious about the role of social media for young people, we believe that this view or this framing can actually also help us think about the ways that it can be a useful space. However, in order to think about social media as a useful place for political socialization or to understand the ways that young people are engaging with politics on social media, we need to put aside some of our dominant expectations or normative expectations about what political expression should look like. So we often expect political expression to be something that is very serious. It is very objective and very rational. And on social media, we see young people expressing in a way that is very emotional. It's very personal. It's coming from their own vantage point. And it speaks the language of the platform. So it's often very humoristic or cynical, infused with popular culture and so on. And so part of it is just understanding that young people are engaging with politics, but in a way that's very different from what we're used to seeing. And this is also where TikTok fits in. We know that TikTok is particularly popular with younger demographics. And it is also a platform that has quite a unique language. So its platform vernacular is all about being authentic and playful. And so we see that even engagement with politics happens in ways that are very counter to our ways of thinking of it, whether it's from a point of view video that tries to sort of put yourself in the shoes of a political candidate. Back when it was Musical.ly in 2016, when we looked at the platform, we saw lots of videos where young people would do lip syncing to speeches by political candidates or create skits around politics. So it's a form of engagement with politics that's very, very different from what we're used to. And yet we argue that it can also be a productive place for young people to engage with politics.
So for those that may not be as familiar, what is TikTok look like relative to other social media platforms, and how might that be important for its use in politics?
Right. So one thing to know about TikTok is speed. So videos on TikTok are generally very short, and they're looping. And so it's something that's happening very quickly and quite repetitively. When you analyze a political TikTok video like we do, you often need to watch it many, many times in order to understand its layers of meaning. Because the meaning is actually created by the mix of the audio track together with the visuals, and also the use of hashtags and descriptions all together create its rich rich intertextual meaning. It's a platform that's very mimetic. So one of its expressivity affordances is that it creates very easy reuse of other people's content. So you can take an audio track, or you can speak back to someone else's video through some of the platform's features. And so it's a platform that is very easy to sort of get into, start creating content by interacting with others. And linking a little bit to our research around around politics, one of the things we argue that this enables is a form of political expression that we term as collective political expression, because it allows you to fit in a sort of imagined audience, either one that has views that are similar to you or sometimes different to you, and use the symbolic resources that others use in order to bring in your message and add that to the political content that's out there.
So what elections and issues have been kind of the quintessential TikTok politics usage so far? Are there examples where it's been very influential in prior elections or in issue advocacy campaigns that we can learn from?
So the question of influence is always one that is a tricky one to answer when it comes to the role of social media. So we, as qualitative research, often like to say, or in terms of our research approach, that we look not so much at what social media does to us or does to people versus what people do with social media or what young people do with social media. The approach towards politics is very much from a personal point of view, from a personal standpoint. So a lot of the perspective is, how will this affect me and my life and my experiences, or how does it look from my vantage point? And there is something about even the technical features of the platform. So say, you know, the fact that you often film with your cell phone camera and you do it on selfie mode. There's something that sort of centers the individual and the individual's perspective. In terms of the topics and the trends and the things that are interesting. So obviously, you know, because it's a younger demographic, the topics are ones that speak more to that demographic in general. And although we are talking here about politics on TikTok, and definitely it's something that is growing in scope, we have to understand and to remember that the vast majority of young people are on TikTok not for the politics. They're there for the music, the challenges, the goofing out. They're there because that's where their friends are. They're there because the algorithm, the For You page, they feel like they know it better. The algorithm knows them better than their best friends in terms of knowing what will interest them and what will pop up next to sort of, you know, create the mood that they're looking for. And so these are the draws of TikTok. And so in that sense, our focus on the politics on TikTok looks at sort of a specific slice of a platform that's really about so much more for young people.
So research on TikTok is just beginning and really pretty small, but we have a lot of research from other social media platforms, especially Twitter and maybe Facebook. How much of that do you think applies? What do we know so far that you think would translate, and what would you be cautious about translating to the new platform? Not new, but the other platform.
Right. So one of our arguments in the book is that we have a problem when we try to generalize about all social media in terms of thinking about their effects, for example, if we talked about influence earlier, because the dynamics of different social media platforms, also around politics, often act in different ways. So one of the things we offer in our book is a theoretical framework to think about how different platforms shape political expression. And this happens through the interaction between three components or three aspects. So one is the affordances of the platform, so what it enables users to do, and also what it constrains and makes it difficult for them to do. One has to do with the norms of the platform. So what people perceive are the appropriate norms of expression on that platform. What is an appropriate topic for the platform, or an appropriate way to talk about that topic. And then the third is the contents. So both the contents that people post, but also the content that the algorithmic feed shows people and makes more visible. And the three of those are in an interaction that then shapes the kinds of political expression that we end up seeing. So if we try to think or to compare between, you asking between TikTok and Twitter or Facebook, in our book, we're thinking about TikTok versus Instagram and YouTube, we see that one thing that TikTok has in particular are its expressivity affordances. So it's a platform that is very much about expressive creation, that is very creative. It's easy to be creative on the platform, and that's part of its vernacular and its language. So we'll see forms of expression that are really rich versus, you know, if on Twitter we mostly see text and we see some links and so on. In a TikTok video, even a very short one, actually, there can be quite a rich, complex layer of meanings to unpack. In terms of the user demographics, and this also has to do in our framework with the norms, we know that TikTok attracts a younger demographic. So Facebook today for young people in the US is often considered old people's media, right? They're not there. And so there's something about our focus as researchers of predominantly researching Facebook and Twitter that means we often miss young people's voices. And that's another thing that makes TikTok quite important. And then another thing that's quite particular from TikTok versus other social media is its algorithm and what it brings to prominence, which is actually not based on who you follow, like on Facebook or on Twitter, but much more on what the algorithm thinks you'll be interested in and the different characteristics of the content. And that means that even everyday users can create a video that will actually attract or will be visible or accessible to many, many viewers who don't follow them. And in that sense, there is something that's a kind of, I would call it like democratic model, not in the political sense, but in the sense of visibility of different content. So all these are things that make TikTok quite particular, in addition to, as I mentioned, it's quite a specific language. That I think, you know, when you take a TikTok video, when you take it out of context and someone sees it, for example, shared on a different social media platform, if they're not used to the platform, they don't speak that language, they will often not understand a lot of the nuance or the references that it includes.
So when new media develop or evolve, we often have complaints about how they're different from the past media, and some of those repeat over time. And so one of the things that I think has been common complaint about TikTok and similar mediums is that to the extent that it involves politics at all, it's infotainment. It's not really providing information. So how would you think about it in the context of those kind of perennial debates that we, you know, have had about the rise of television and other social media as well?
Right. So there's an interesting meta-analysis of learning about politics on social media conducted by my colleague, Dr. Ranam Salem and Alon Zeusner, which shows that from a meta-analysis of, I think, hundreds of studies, that the learning of about political issues from social media amounts to basically zero. So it's hard to claim that social media is the right place to learn in depth about politics. I would say that there is something about the way that politics is presented on social media that is conducive much more towards a different political aim or political goal, and that is mobilization. So in terms of, you know, getting people sort of interested in something or rallied around something, especially if it's something that they're already sort of inclined to believe. And in that terms, even getting people active beyond the social media sphere, social media can be quite a powerful tool. But if we're thinking about another democratic goal, and that's sort of having a discursive conversation, having dialogue, especially also with those who think other than we do, social media does not seem very conducive towards that goal, and TikTok specifically. So the way that the platform is designed, the way that the algorithm is designed, the way that the norms of expression work, it is not really a place where you can go very much into depth around political issues and political debates. We do think, however, that it can be a place for people to find out about something and then say, I didn't quite understand that. Maybe I'll go and see what they were talking about. Who's that political candidate? What is that issue? You know, what happened there that I'm not quite understanding? And in that sense, we have to remember that for a lot of young people, social media are their main source of news and information, because they don't necessarily read mainstream media. And sometimes they use TikTok to search instead of using Google. And so we hope at least that it's not their only source of information, but that at least sometimes it can maybe sort of incentivize them or push them to also go and learn deeper about these issues somewhere else. Because at the end of the day, watching the TikTok videos won't make them a political expert.
So you mentioned that it might be a tool for mobilization. Do you think that that does translate to the offline world? Is this something that can make people show up at a protest, vote, engage in offline activities, or is this really an alternative?
So in sort of the new media research world, we're really refraining more and more from the division between like the online and the offline. So assuming that these are separated, because really when TikTok is on my phone and I'm taking it everywhere with me, it's just a seamless part of my life. And so I think that's not necessarily the right division to make. But if we're asking, does participation or political participation on social media, does it translate or does it also involve being part of things like protests or voting and so on? I think what the research mostly shows is that our previous critique that we had of, the slacktivism or the clicktivism that assumed that if I'm active on social media around politics, for example, that would replace the so-called offline participation. That critique does not seem to hold. Those who are politically active online are often those who are also politically active in real life, and they're using social media as another place to engage with their politics and to mobilize. But social media can also be sort of a first step or an early introduction into some of the political action for those who usually would not have been active politically at all. And so it's in that sense, it's not suppressing political action for those who would be politically active anyway. And it is something that enables people to come into or sort of have an introduction into political realms when that's not something that they would have necessarily done before.
Another place where our initial fears haven't necessarily matched the early research is about political bubbles and the role of the algorithms, especially on YouTube and Facebook. I think we've found so far that certainly there are some people in bubbles, but not necessarily because the algorithm has forced them that way. Anything about TikTok that might change that? Is it a medium that might be especially conducive to bubbles or to people getting out of their political bubble and hearing different views?
So it seems that research shows that the bubble hypothesis works mostly for people who are very political in the first place. And so the kind of content that they attract is mostly political content, and they're quite partisan. So around that, we have to remember that most people on TikTok don't come to it for their politics. They're coming for it for other things. And so from that reason, we wouldn't necessarily assume that it would act more in a way that's conducive to the filter bubble or echo chamber, but rather that people might be exposed to different things. We do know that the algorithm, as we said, it's at least known, or people say or report that they feel that the algorithm knows them, right? So it knows to give them the content that that they like and that they enjoy. And in that sense, when the algorithm is quite predictive in speaking to what people are interested in, then we can assume that at least for the people who are showing some inclination towards maybe just hearing more of their side and having their views confirmed, that the algorithm will then also speak to that. Of course, the fact that so much of content on TikTok is algorithmically curated makes understanding or really parsing out these questions very difficult. I have heard of some research that tries, I think, more anecdotally, to use bots to like specific videos and then see what the algorithm then keeps feeding them and so on. But I think this is still a question that is open, and I think that it's quite likely that, as we saw, that the filter bubble hypothesis was quite overrated for social media in general. I wouldn't assume that would be very different for TikTok.
So we are in the midst of the 2024 presidential campaign. And on the one hand, TikTok penetration has increased a lot. A lot of people are expecting it to have more of a role in this year's election. On the other hand, we have two very old candidates who don't necessarily seem like they would be TikTok stars. So how much of a role do you think it will play this year, and how will, you know, young people deal with the fact that they're dealing with two candidates that don't necessarily speak to them?
Right. So, of course, there was quite an uproar, I'd say, when Biden opened his TikTok account on Super Bowl day after, you know, the TikTok being banned from government devices. It seemed quite hypocritical to many. But I think it's a step that, or an action that's quite understandable, given Biden's attempt to reach these young voters. I think it makes a lot of sense to think that TikTok will play an important place, an important role in this election. And politicians traditionally have often, I wouldn't say quite overlooked, but not given enough attention to the youth vote. Part of it has to do with sort of a cyclical process where young people in the U.S. vote at lower rates than their older counterparts. And so they also receive less attention from politicians, and that maybe then reinforces that cycle. Although we've also seen that tendency has changed in some of the past elections. I think you're right to say that this is an election where young people are feeling that their voices are not heard and are not well represented. I don't think TikTok can be the remedy for it. It's not enough, even if one of those candidates will fare surprisingly well on TikTok. And by the way, if they would want to do that, the key is to have young aides, people who really speak the language of the platform and who know how to do it well, because there's nothing more pathetic or damaging than a politician who tries to do TikTok but does it badly. So I'm thinking it's an important thing to do, but it will not solve, I think, any of those candidates' problems with young people.
So the U.S. House of Representatives recently passed a bill by a pretty large bipartisan margin to try to force a sale of TikTok to a non-China connected firm. How surprising have been the politics of this been? You know, why do you think there is this bipartisan consensus on the fears about Chinese influence? And do you think that, you know, if something like this passes, that it's going to create an uproar or backlash against Biden or anyone else?
So the question of the Chinese influence on TikTok seems, at least as to my understanding, to be resting on a lot of speculation. I've not seen clear evidence that shows this influence exists, but I think rather it's more the fears or the concerns that that it could exist. So I think banning TikTok on government devices is one thing, because, you know, these devices could possibly be hacked and then be a way to steal data, and I think that's a viable concern. But banning the platform as a whole seems to me to be quite counter to values of free speech and freedom of expression.
So researchers tend to have more respect for I guess the role of traditional media than maybe these users of social media do. And one of the things that they tend to say when I ask, you know, why would you trust what some random person is telling you in this video, is that actually, you know, they don't want the gatekeepers. They want the personal testimonials. So, for example, you know, they're watching a video from someone who is in Gaza or who is in Ukraine and reporting their own experiences. You know, to what extent, I guess, is that a true change? And I guess, what are the costs and benefits of relying on testimonials rather than gatekeepers who provide context?
So one of the ideas that we suggest in our book is that the kind of political expression that young people engage on social media reflects a new model of good citizenship and what good citizenship looks like for them. And that is what we call the expressive citizen model. So within the expressive citizen model, there's this idea that if you see an injustice or if you see something that is wrong, it is your duty to speak out. And that speaking out on social media is a way to act on it. So it's sort of a form of good citizenship in and of itself that is sort of an obligation or is seen as a moral obligation. And we talk about how, if indeed young people are engaging with politics around a model like that, it has advantages and disadvantages from the point of view of advancing democracy. So, and one advantage is that it's something that encourages participation, right? So it encourages people to speak out, to take responsibility, to have a voice, to see themselves as someone who should be part of a public conversation. But on the downside, it means that sometimes people may speak out or express themselves around things that they're not necessarily fully knowledgeable about, or really, as you said, you know, sort of bring their specific point of view. It's something that resonates very much with the language of some of these platforms that is very much about telling your personal story, showing the ramifications from your point of view and so on, which is partly why it's resonant with young viewers who are looking to that. But I think we need to still find ways to bridge between some of the tenets of expressive citizenship. So this idea of, you know, you should speak out and you should, you know, sort of like tell your story and tell your narrative, but also think about how it can also enable listening to other views, understanding broader contexts, problematizing your own point of view, and so on. So that is part of what we try to do in our concluding chapter when we think about sort of the advantages and disadvantages of this expressive citizenship model.
So we know young people are seeing this as an important platform. But how much do TikTok users differ from other young people? For that, we now turn to Richard Fox.
So tell us the major findings and takeaways from your article about TikTok's influence on political behavior.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. First, a shout out to my co-author, Kiana Karimi. You know, we run a project here at LMU where we have our best senior students in political science. They're able to sort of run their own surveys. We give them money to either run Prolific or MTurk to sort of address questions, and they're almost always related to social media or media trends. You know, this started with her senior honors thesis project, so I want to just acknowledge her great work. She's off at law school. So, you know, 2020, we might call that the first TikTok presidential election. I think it is. And so we did a two-part study where we studied the content of the top 20 most political TikToks that had the most views. And then we did a survey on MTurk, Mechanical Turk, you know, where your survey respondents can answer questions and get a little modest pay in their Amazon account, about 615 18 to 29-year-olds on their TikTok habits. Because if you know any young people, it's crazily sweep, continues to grow astronomically in its usage, and we want to see what kind of impact it might be having. So this data is highly suggestive. I wouldn't sort of think it's authoritative. It's a first sort of strike trying to understand what TikTok might be doing. And we found that, you know, we looked at all the main social media users, and among young citizens, TikTok had more of an influence or was more correlated with them being political participants, both online and in traditional forms of participation. Volunteering, giving money, participating in the political process. So it suggests that TikTok has a potentially outsized influence among social media platforms.
So give us the basics of how TikTok works, how it's different from other social media platforms, and how that might matter for policy.
I'm very worried as an older person, I end up sounding like somebody talking about the Google or something, as one of our presidents once did, or the World Wide Web. My late teenage children will probably not be impressed by how this goes. My TikTok is a form of a streaming platform that took off, you know, when it was launched in 2017, and has become crazily popular. It started off with 15-second videos. It's a complete platform where you can just quickly scroll, by the swipe through 15-second videos. It was how it sort of started and burst onto the scene. They were almost all sort of fun, dance, music, pet tricks. And it was just in a very amusing way to entertain yourself. You know, they've since extended it. You have 60-minute videos and more recently 3 minutes. I even think there's some long-form TikTok now. I was reading the possibly up to 10 minutes. So there had been something like that. So it was called Vine that I think, did Twitter put that out? That ended up going away. You probably know this way better than I do. Then it ended up going away. And so it just sort of jumped into this market. And it just seems more fun and faster paced way to like sort of look at a lot of things quickly. So that's how it's taken off. When you look at the content of it, it's actually kind of hard to measure. It doesn't have that much directly political content. When you look at the millions and millions of videos posted, most of them are categorized as sort of dance / entertainment and then tips and life tips and advice, fashion and trends. With things that are directly and fully political, it's a pretty small percentage.
So listeners probably would know you most from your work on gender and politics and American elections rather than, you know, see you as a Gen Z TikTok influencer. So how do you, but as you say, our students are often telling us that social media is going to control or be very important in the next election. So how do you kind of deal with that dissonance? When should we believe the young people that everything is changing and when should we be skeptical?
So a multi-pronged question. I mean, so I've always dabbled in political communication. I worked on a book called Tabloid Justice, which was about how how coverage of the O.J. Simpson trial was perhaps changing how people or misinforming people about how they thought about the justice. So I've always sort of, as a secondary field of research, tried to keep an eye on sort of trends in communication and political communication, how that might be affecting voters and candidates. So how influential? I mean, like, there's so much noise in an election. it's gotten harder and harder, especially with siloed news sort of, to figure out what really matters. And there's a lot of research on social media, as you know, all the different, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, X, I guess, and now less on TikTok. It does suggest, it's mixed, but it does suggest that it has an influence on getting people to pay attention to certain issues, and even maybe attending rallies like the George Floyd demonstrations, or getting very upset about certain Donald Trump. You know, he was disrupted based on some sort of Instagram and TikTok activities. So it's just there are lots of examples, and the research shows that it seems to matter. And as TikTok, if you watch the usage statistics, TikTok, it'll stop at some point, but it's continuing to just grow and grow and grow exponentially. So that's why it's getting a lot of focus. So, and it seems to have an impact. So I don't think it's the only thing or the most important thing, but it seems to be an important thing, especially for voters under 30, as a potential tool to mobilize them, get them to care about certain issues. That does seem to be happening. Will it determine the outcome of the election? Well, in our current presidential state, maybe if it gets as close as it's been in 4 or 5 key states, we're talking about shiftings of pretty small numbers of voters or turnout increases that could be pretty small to change the outcome. So I'm sure our young people are overstating because it's so important to them, the social media and the outcome of elections. But I think for those of us who watch elections, there's certainly a way that it could really be determinative or influential.
So you find that TikTok use is associated with support for liberal politicians and beliefs in the importance of racial injustice. So just kind of walk me through what you think the mechanics of that would look like if we assume that some of that is actual influence of use of the platform. Why might it change those kinds of beliefs?
Well, there's quite a bit of increasing evidence that sort of social media is more influential to liberals or Democrats, or they're more using it more, right? That's been seen across a number of spectrums. I have another student project where she surveyed 500 prolific 18 to 24 year olds on prolific, another sort of public opinion gathering. And I'd love to tell you about. So it's at this point, it's a place where Democrats/liberals are more likely to come together on their issues. And especially for young people, they have issues that are very clear. They have reproductive rights. They have climate change, they have LGBTQ plus rights, and they have gun control. And those seem to be very mobilizing for young people, and they're all on the liberal side of the on the spectrum. So it's the reason why we asked about racial justice, because that study was about the 2020 election and sort of George Floyd, and that the sort of all the demonstrations in that time period. So I don't think those are not relevant anymore. We've sort of moved on to the next set of issues that sort of more enduring issues, especially with abortion rights having. So just those seem like issues that are very sort of TikTokable or Instagrammable, where you can come together in a group and get information about them, and it plays to sort of the more liberal base of young voters on social media.
You also find that they're more likely to say that they take politics less seriously as well. So we have that, you know, they are engaged in these serious issues, but they take the process less seriously. So might that connect to some worries about kind of trivialization?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting. I think all of us, we all go back to Neil Postman, right? Amusing ourselves to death when he wrote in the 80s about how television was turning, politics into entertainment. I don't think he's still alive, is he? He would probably be quite incredibly, it's 100 times what he was worried about, right? Politico did this interesting story last year talking about TikTok's influence, about how politics comes into things. And they were quoting this influencer who was giving relationship tips. And tip number one was avoid people who say they don't like McDonald's French fries, you know, right? What are they talking about? Two, avoid people who only like one genre of music. You can't just like hip hop or country. That's not a good sign. And three, buried in this was you shouldn't really get involved with people who say they don't care what's going on or don't vote, you know, right? So TikTok blending all of these things, right, is sort of fun, entertaining, tips relevant to my life, and then sort of politics pops along. And a lot of the videos about politics, the direct ones, are funny, right? So it's sort of making you aware, but maybe not taking it very seriously. So I think someone could get very worried, like, oh, well, I don't have a right. Well, I don't like it, but they took my rights of free speech away, you know, right? I think sort of it makes it sort of politics seem sort of entertaining. Engage it. You're brought up to speed. You're made aware of issues that are happening, but it's not very serious when it's spliced in amongst the 20-second video on relationships.
So we have a reasonable first cut, but it is from a non-fully representative survey, and we're just dealing with kind of associations, observational evidence. So how much would you expect this to carry over to the American population as a whole of young people and to actually be causal?
You know, we use regression, and I don't want to, you know, wonk us out here a little bit. I mean, MTurk is a voluntary source where people come on and they get paid a buck to sort of take your survey, and maybe, you know, they're not doing much, and over a course of a day or two, they might get $20 if they did 20 surveys put in their Amazon account. And we know from research that people who answer this tend to skew a little bit liberal, a little bit more educated, a little bit more white, right, than the population, right? Yet, you know, we use regression also. We're trying to control for lots of things you would try to control for in predicting certain behaviors, their party affiliation, their levels of interest, their income levels. So I think it's, you know, slightly more than suggestive. It's a finding that holds when we try to control for all these things once we acknowledge that the sample is, you know, so-so at best.
So research in this area is just beginning. What would you say is kind of the agenda for better understanding the role of TikTok in politics?
I just want to point out one thing. Also, there's huge gender gaps on usage of these mediums too. So Instagram and TikTok have a pretty much sort of a 60-40 female male gap. But Twitter and YouTube are way more male. So that's something I'm curious about, sort of fully understanding why that and what that might mean, right? I actually think we basically only understand sort of the impact of TikTok at a pretty surface level. Maybe there's a handful of articles out there. A lot of this might be neuroscience research also. I don't, you know, the Pew study suggests that people go on it for an average of 8 minutes a day, the users, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a day, you know, and if you're a user, you go on 7 or 8 times a day. You're like, oh, I'm sitting on a bus, I've got 10 minutes, I'm going to entertain myself. I don't know what that's doing to you. If you think that's news gathering now, does it change how you think about what it means to get news? Does it change how your brain works to process information like this, right? So those are sort of fundamental questions about sort of social media generally. But I don't think we quite understand how a lot of experimental researchers are trying to figure this out now. We don't quite understand if across 20 videos I just watched in my 5-minute session, two of them were about gun control. Did that have any resonance? Does that stay with me in any way? Do I remember anything I see on TikTok? I know we have one of my colleagues here worked at Google for many years and worked as experiments. Does a meme seems to have more influence, like a photo or a meme, than like having someone read an article online? They'll remember the meme. So I don't think we quite fully understand, it's because we care about politics, I don't think we quite fully understand how political messages are either being retained or not retained. TikTok or others. So I think we need a lot. There's a lot to move on there.
So one benefit of having older researchers study new questions is that we've heard a lot of these arguments before. And it is striking that the two main kind of concerns that we're just going to get sort of short clips, those have been made about TV news for a long time, that we're going to merge information and entertainment again, been made for quite a few decades about traditional media. So what do we know from kind of the history of those complaints? How often have they been true, and how has that changed our politics?
I mean, I guess our job as researchers is not to sort of, cry wolf every time something happens, right? But to like provide some long-term perspective. Like I brought up Neil Postman's book earlier, that's now, that book is approaching 40 years old, right? This deep concern about how we're going to be shallowing out our discourse and how we think about these critical questions of governance. Maybe it's just a long process, but these things tend to be hard to measure the way we do them in one-off, a study here, a study there, and it's sort of hard just to look at the trajectory. It's kind of hard not to be more deeply concerned about misinformation and attention spans. Those two really sort of strike me. Misinformation's all over social media. TikTok hasn't been as aligned with some of those concerns as other platforms. I'm sure that's coming in the 2024 election. So even when we go back over time to these other mediums, when we start off with radio, television, the internet bursts on the scene, I don't think misinformation was a leading concern. And I think it is now, because anybody can put anything anywhere almost is what it feels like. So that one feels like a true thing to think about for politics and moving forward, not just, pressing the alarm bells. Whether TikTok's bad for you or social media is bad for you, it's making you less engaged with politics. I feel like the research suggests it's mixed, and it's not making you any less engaged than you used to be as a whole population. I don't know if you would agree with that, right? It's made certain people way more engaged. We know that the people who were the ones who were reading the newspaper every morning anyway, now can drill down and see what's happening in that special election across the country, where they never could have done that before. So it's led to a group of sort of kind of political junkies. But if you talk to teenagers or young people, they would say I'm learning a lot of things quickly, and they would say, wow. It's not just entertainment. Your teenage kid will come out and ask you about the Ukraine war because of a TikTok video we saw. So, it is mixed. I of course, have deep worries about sort of a kind of discourse, attention spans, lack of quality information and misinformation that seem like they're worse to me studying this over the last 25 years.
So we're going to have a presidential campaign between two not very well-liked candidates who are very old. And we're talking about, a platform used by young people. But how is it that these candidates are going to get any traction on this kind of platform? They don't necessarily seem conducive to the TikTok era.
Well, I think it's going to all be issue-based, right? The Democratic Party influencers on TikTok or content creators are going to be focusing on abortion, climate change, the best climate change policy we've ever had, gun control, and try to sort of motivate support for Biden secondarily. On the Republican side, they've been much slower to use TikTok. When we did our study about the top videos that were pro-Trump versus the top videos that were pro-Biden in 2020, the ones for Biden had so many more views and looks. So I don't know. I can't quite tell if the Republicans are catching up on TikTok or other social media. My sense is from news reporting, they're not yet. So I'm not sure what they'll do. But Trump was quite savvy on Facebook and whatnot. So I just think we're going to see this continuation of trying to, you know, avoid the fact that these are two old and unpopular candidates and try to use the technology in ways that could actually motivate, in this case, our discussion of TikTok people under 30 to actually get out and vote.
Anything we didn't get to that you wanted to include or anything you want to tout about what you're working on next?
I just wanted to talk about one of these next student projects I'm pretty excited about. So I have a student who's studying political socialization, and any of us who teach U.S. politics, we've always taught people family, peers, education, and media are the most important. Family, most important by far in helping you sort of derive your political beliefs across your teen years. And so she was questioning that, and she thinks, I don't know, they're spending so many hours on social media. I think social media is now the biggest socializing agent. So she went to Prolific, which is a better way to get a survey than MTurk, right? It's sort of, you know, it's a panel, right? And she's uncovered that 50% of young people say social media, this is a Republican, is the most important socializing agent, right? And then we try to test, is it really true? Parents are way down. The number one is way down in their own perception. But what we do find is something I alluded to earlier. Social media is way more influential for Democrats than Republicans. Republican 18 to 24-year-olds are much more likely to align, match with their parents directly than Democrats. So then say social media is way more important to them, and they're more liberal than their parents. So I think there's some great opportunities for political socialization research as the world sort of changes dramatically in terms of how people get information. So I'm pretty excited about some future projects. We're going to keep doing experiments also to see, like, when you watch a TikTok video, what does it do to you? I have a few students who are going to work on that next year.
There's a lot more to learn. The Science of Politics is available biweekly from the Niskanen Center. I'm your host, Matt Grossman. If you like this discussion, here are the episodes I recommend checking out next, linked on our website. Did Facebook really polarize and misinform the 2016 electorate? Does nationalized media mean the death of local politics? How online media polarizes and encourages voters? How news and social media shape American voters? And the influence of Twitter on journalism and politics? Thanks to Netta Kligler-Valenchik and Richard Fox for joining me. Please check out Not Your Parents' Politics and Scrolling, Simping, and Mobilizing, and then listen in next time.